ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। I've been speaking on Sri Vishnu Sahasranam. Did I speak on that here last time? Can any of you remember? I did also. All right. Okay, so on and off I've been doing so. Almost quarter of the way through now. Name 240. Vishvastrik. The first name in Sri Vishnu Sahasranam is Vishva, which means, common meaning of the term Vishva is the universe, yeah. So now there'll be a few names which give more elaboration on how Vishnu is the universe, what is his relationship to the universe. This is a subject of much interest to us, being within this material universe. This name Vishvasrik means the creator of the universe. So for those who are within the universe, it's a very important function. For those who know nothing beyond it, just like in the prison, people, they don't see, but they hear about, the king, he's the king of the land. It's he who made this prison. He assigned some company to design and build it. So Krishna does that also. He assigns the job to Brahma. Actually, practically we can say the Christian religion, they so much emphasize on the creator of the universe. It's more like Brahma worship than Krishna worship, because they think that the whole function of God is to create the world, and that's it, finished. Because they don't know anything beyond the world. So when some scientist comes along and say, we don't think that there's any creator of the world, and then they don't have any faith in God, because that's all they know, is God is the creator of the world. But as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, that is not his greatest glory. That someone has built a high-tech toilet, that's not going to get him a Nobel Prize for architecture, if there is such a thing as a Nobel Prize for architecture. Nobel was a guy who made dynamite, so that's for blowing up buildings, not for making them. Well, maybe if you blow up enough buildings, you'll end up with a universe. Make a big enough bang, and there'll be a universe. You have to have a lot of dynamite. So Vishvasrik means the creator of the universe. Vishnu Sahasranam has different renditions. Sometimes this word is given as, this name is given as Vishvadrik, which means the maintainer or the holder of the universes. And there's one more. There's one more also, which I can't see now. But Vishvasrik means the creator of the universe. Now, one name which has already come in Vishnu Sahasranama is Nyaya, which means literally law. So he is the law, he is the lawmaker, everything operates according to his laws. The universe is created according to his rules. So the whole universe is going on according to the rules of God. Scientists, they inspect the world in its in its incredible complexity. There are two kinds of people who, or two kinds of conclusions that come from examining the complexity of the universe. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Chaturvidha bhajante manjana sukritino arjuna. Artho jignyasur artharti jnani cha bharatarshaba. Krishna says that four kinds of pious people, they start worship of me. The distressed, the curious, the desirer of wealth, and the person in knowledge. But it's not that everyone who is distressed turns to Krishna. Some people who are distressed, they become atheistic. They may not even... people who are not thinking much about life, they're just wandering through it or being led through it by the noose of time. When they become very distressed, they may start to think a little bit. And some people, when they do, they become atheistic. They think, well, I heard about this God, I never thought much about him, but now I'm sure there's no God because I didn't do anything wrong. So, must be God's fault. Whoops, there's no... oh, can't be God's fault, because if God's supposed to be good. Okay, that means there's no God. So there's another verse in Bhagavad Gita. This Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha Manmaya Mamupashvitaha Bahavo Gyana Tapasa Puta Madbhava Magataha. Krishna says that people who have become freed from attachment, fear, and anger, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha, who have become absorbed in me, taking shelter of me, who have become purified by knowledge and austerity, many such persons have come to me. So in the purport of that verse, Srila Prabhupada analyzes that Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. So anger, some people in anger, they turn against the whole conception of God. They say, oh, there's so much suffering in the world. How can there be any God? These people who are talking about God, they're the enemies of human society. Karl Marx famously wrote that religion is the opium of the people. So, persons who are pious, they turn to God in distress. When they require money, first people who are desperate for money, they may turn to God. Not everyone will turn to God. Some may turn to crime. Those people who are curious, well, the scientists in general, we can say they're curious. They're curious what's going on in the world. They're very interested to look and see what if we look in a microscope, what will we see? If we look in a telescope, what will we see? And the more they see, the more they understand how incredibly complex the universe is. They have to think, well, where did it all come from? And those who are atheistic, they see in the complexity of the universe evidence that there is no God. Because they think, how could anyone create anything so complex? It's not possible. And why would they do such a thing? Whereas those who are more pious, they see, well, it must have been someone that did it. How could such complexity come without a person behind it? And how could that all come into being simply without any person? So this different kinds of people analyze the same phenomena and come to a different conclusion. So the one name for Vishnu here is the creator of the universe. Exactly why it's so complex. It may be very difficult for us to understand. Of course, for Krishna, he may not see it as very complex. Because that's why the scientists find it very difficult to accept that there's any God. Seeing the complexity, they just can't imagine that. It's just so complicated. All the different manifestations of everything. But for, it seems complex to us because we are of such paltry intelligence. But to Krishna, why should it be complex to for Krishna? It's very easy. Just like a miracle. People, a miracle is, what is a miracle? It's something that scientists don't believe in. Srila Prabhupada also said, what people call a miracle is just that they don't understand how it happened. So there are many things which we may not understand. But then, if we understand, then some of the, or what we have thought to be mystical, it becomes demystified. So the scientists, they have the idea that all kinds of phenomena that we cannot understand, if we investigate more, we will be able to explain it in empiric terms. And in the meantime, if we don't understand it, it doesn't exist. Like UFOs, for instance. We can't explain it, so it doesn't exist, even though we have so much evidence of it. But we don't understand it, therefore we can't allow anyone to believe. If we can't explain it, we won't allow anyone to believe in it. So, the science of Godhead, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, this is a phrase that appears in Srimad Bhagavatam, which Srila Prabhupada, he emphasized on much, that we are not presenting dogmatic religion, we're presenting science. There are laws of the universe, there is a law maker. We have to know what the laws are and follow them to be good citizens. So, the science of Godhead, the approach is quite different to that of the atheistic scientists, whose methodology is bottom up. They start at the bottom of the well, with ignorance. And they collect information and they study it, and then gradually they build up their knowledge over many generations. They have many false starts, and they make more and more discoveries, and they gradually try to understand everything. The Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, the science of God, as received through disciplic succession, is top down. Means we know that we accept that there is a science of God and that we are very tiny. We are not, we don't have the mental or intellectual capacity to just collect all the information and sort it out all by ourselves. Just as a frog in the well. Frog in a well cannot understand what's going on beyond his well. And because he cannot understand what's going on beyond his well, he cannot probably understand what's going on within his well. So it is a defective approach to try to understand with only our unaided senses and intelligence. So the Vedic process is top down. Veda means knowledge. Knowledge is not sectarian. And this idea that the Vedas or the Bhagavad Gita is a Hindu Bible, as if it's some sectarian tribal belief, this is a complete misunderstanding of the term Veda. Veda simply means knowledge. So knowledge of an object or a phenomenon is naturally, automatically coexistent with the existence of that phenomenon or subject. Just like that, let's see, 1 + 1 = 2. Okay, that's also disputable in one sense, because what is a number anyway? Did anyone ever see a number? You can write it down, but It is a mental construct, actually. Mathematics is all in the mind. Okay, let's try something else. Two atoms of hydrogen combines with one atom of oxygen to form one molecule of dihydrogen oxide, otherwise commonly known in English as water. So, water exists. The fact that it is, at least we all accept it on faith. Does anyone out here know how to prove that atoms exist? Anyone? We all accept it on faith. Actually, it's just faith, that's all. But anyway, accepting on faith that water is combined of hydrogen and oxygen, the fact is independent from the phenomenon. Water exists. And knowledge of it is independent of its existence. It's just with water goes the knowledge of that is intrinsic to its existence. And what are the qualities of water? That is described in the Bhagavatam also. Qualities of water that it, obviously, it moistens, it dissolves things, it enables taste. You can't taste anything without water. And, various other. It cleanses. So there are various qualities of water. So the knowledge of any phenomenon is independent of the existence of that phenomenon. And in the same way, Veda means knowledge. It is knowledge of everything. So Veda is not a Hindu scripture. It simply means knowledge, that's all. And the Vedic process of acquiring knowledge, which actually it's everyone everywhere, we learn by hearing from others. So it means Veda means knowledge, and that knowledge is transmitted within human society. It is received within human society. Krishna spoke to Brahma, the Vedic knowledge at the beginning of Brahma's life, at the beginning of Brahma's each day, and various aspects of the Vedic knowledge, they also become revealed within human society from time to time. The rishi, the term rishi, the original meaning of that term is one who spiritual reception sees the mantras of the Vedas, mantra drashta. The knowledge is universal, it's everywhere. Those who can perceive that knowledge and they channel it or they receive it and they distribute that in human society. So from time to time the knowledge may become, or some aspects of the knowledge may become lost within human society, but then again they become transmitted or they become made available. So the knowledge of the universe, the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the knowledge of who we are, what we're doing in this world, that knowledge exists eternally, and the Vedic process is first of all simply to accept that the Vedas, that is genuine knowledge, and then to receive that knowledge from an authorized transmitter or authorized transmitters, persons. And how do we know who's authorized, who have received that knowledge themselves? So it's a top down process. The knowledge is perfect. We simply have to receive it. We simply have to make ourselves qualified recipients to receive that knowledge. So that there is a creator of the universe is accepted as axiomatic. that there is knowledge of the universe which exists independent of the universe and all the phenomena within it is accepted by followers of the Vedas as axiomatic. And the process is simply to hear the Vedic knowledge. So this Vishnu Sahasranama, it presents knowledge of the universe, knowledge of our situation within the universe by focusing on the actual point of the all the Vedic knowledge, which is Krishna, Vishnu. So he is the creator of the universe. Why should he do so? This is some argument the atheists put. Why should he do so? Some religionists, they say that, well, God made the world for us to enjoy. That's his kindness upon us. It is a disastrous misunderstanding of the nature of the universe, why we're here, and why the Creator made it. It's a disastrous misunderstanding because the conception that this universe for us to is here to enjoy is the conception that traps us within the suffering, which is the actual nature of the universe, and blocks our real understanding that we're not the enjoyer. That will come up in the next name, Vishvabhuk, the enjoyer of the universe. We are not meant to be the enjoyers. So it's essential for us to understand that, yes, God is the creator of the universe. Why did he create it? This idea that he created it for our enjoyment it means spiritual life finished from the very beginning. Even if we superficially believe in God, our conception of God will be he who provides facilities for our sense enjoyment. And then when someone else comes along and says, hey, look, it's not enjoyable, and people are suffering, and then that will shake our faith. So why the universe exists? That is because we desired, that is our misuse of our minute independence. Icha dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantapa. We came into this creation due to material desire, and dvesha means envy or bad feeling. It is our fault. Don't blame Satan. We are all Satan. Who is Satan? Well, maybe the Christians would agree. Yes, all you Hare Krishnas are Satan. I remember once we were selling Sri Ishopanishad in Dublin, Ireland. One Christian priest came up to me and said, just see, because on the cover there's Vishnu with all the snakes behind. All the snakes. That just shows you are agents of Satan. An interfaith dialogue. What do you say to such a person? So, by going through these names of Vishnu, which actually they focus on different qualities of Vishnu as described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other shastras, we can understand clearly what is the nature of God, what is our own nature, what is the nature of this world, what are we here for? What are we supposed to do here? What is our relationship with him? All this becomes clear. So he creates the world to facilitate the perverse desires of those who envy him. Just as a prison, a reformatory prison. There is punishment, but at the same time there is the attempt to educate and reform the prisoners. Generally, prisoners are not very reformable. Most prisoners, especially hardcore prisoners, they're very difficult to reform. If someone's been in prison once, twice, three times, it's almost guaranteed. When they come out, they're going to do a crime again. So we've been in and out of various prisons, various wombs. So it's a difficult job to reform us. But the attempt is going on. So that is one purpose, to indulge the perverse desires of those who have decided that life is better without Krishna. Very bad decision, but every jiva has the independence to choose like that. Then also to reform them. And that also gives the opportunity for Vishnu to perform various pastimes which he cannot perform in the spiritual world. Just like fighting the demons. There's some poster which is widely circulated of showing the spiritual world, Nrsimha killing Hiranyakashipu, but that doesn't happen. There's no killing in the spiritual world. That happens in the material world. So there are various pastimes that Vishnu performs which are suitable only for the material world. The slow progress of the jivas toward him, sometimes he just comes and personally comes and gives a personal boost to the whole process. Otherwise, in the material world, everything is always gradually declining. The materialists, they have the hope that everything will get better. That's called durasha. They have bad hopes. They say everything will get better. They're hoping, but the actual situation is that everything gets worse. That's particularly prominent in Kali Yuga, that people are very hopeful that things will get better, but actually things get worse. And even when things seem to get better, then we find out that actually it's not better at all. And the whole of the progress of what they call the progress of modern civilization epitomizes that we're going to make progress, things are going to get better, but at the end we find things are worse in every respect. So Krishna comes from time to time and he sets things right. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanya bhavati bharata abhutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya tadushkritam dharma sangsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. In every age, things go off. They get worse and worse and worse. And when things get really bad, then Krishna himself comes to set things right, to destroy the demons who are making things worse and worse and worse, to uplift the devotees and to reestablish the principles of dharma. So these are all various functions of the universe. Krishna is the creator of the universe. He creates it according to his rules. We should understand that it is his universe, not ours. There's also a conception in some tribal religion that later became widespread, became a world religion. In one of their books, it says that God gave dominion over the earth to man. So their idea is that, yeah, God gave the earth to us to enjoy. So let us enjoy it. But we should understand that it is his universe. It operates according to his rules. It is in our self-interest to know what his rules are and to follow those rules, not to deny him or to think that we can make our own rules. It doesn't work. We want to make the universe the way we think, the way we think it should be. But better we get in line with the way that He has made it. Also, we should understand that this universe is for these sinful people, and that that Krishna is the creator of the universe is not His highest glory. He has His own universe, His own world, where everything is really bright and beautiful. There is a song which I learned in school, as part of our indoctrination, that all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the good Lord made them all. Which is true. It's nice, it's a kind of gratefulness to God, but it's a misplaced gratefulness because it presupposes that everything in the world is nice. So we should be grateful to God. Recently, it was about a year ago, I was on a train and sitting opposite me was a Christian nun in India. So she said, as she brought out her meat sandwich and said, we should be grateful to God. He has given us all this nice food to eat. So it's a kind of theism, but it lacks Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana. And it lacks even knowledge which anyone should be able to see. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Janma Mrityu Jaravyadhi Dukha Dosha Anudarshanam. Knowledge means one major aspect of knowledge is to see that the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease are always present. But we don't see. We imagine this world is very nice. So anudarshana means to always see. It can also mean anu means, it gives the sense of following, and darshana means to see. So anudarshana means following, means moment after moment, to always see. And anudarshanam also means seeing by following others. So that means seeing in the disciplic succession, seeing. It is explained to us, it is pointed out to us. So why does God create a universe in which there is suffering? That we have to consider. This is a problem for persons who think that, it's a theological problem for persons who think that God made the world for us to enjoy, when they see there's a lot about it which is not enjoyable. In fact, the very nature of the world is that it's full of suffering. So, God is understood to be all good and all powerful. But when we see suffering in the world, we think that, well, how can He be all good if there's suffering? Or maybe He's all good, but He's not all powerful because He's not really in control. He'd like everything to be nice, but it's beyond His control. So, without understanding who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what are His qualities, why He creates this world, then our theism cannot be perfect. We have to adopt some kind of compromised theism, and that will tend toward atheism, because this is considered a theological problem among people who don't have knowledge, scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. Why is there suffering in the world? God made the world for us to enjoy, then why is there so much suffering? And they can't answer it. Or they may answer it that in ways which are not properly theistic, by saying that, well, actually God's not really in control, or he doesn't have full power. So without, we may think that, well, we don't need all this discussion, so much discussion, but it is necessary, because unless we understand clearly the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the nature of this world, why we're here, then we have to come to conclusions which do not nourish bhakti, which militate against bhakti, which will destroy our bhakti, or without that knowledge, then our bhakti will be separated from our intelligence. That means we believe in God, we believe in Krishna, we like to chant Hare Krishna, we like to play with our deities. You find some people, they think, well, Krishna is my child, so throw him up in the air and catch him, deity. Yeah, and it's India, you know, everything is possible. In the name of theism or atheism, or no name needed at all, the nameless. So bhakti should be understood on the basis of Shastra. Who is God? What is our relationship? How to practice? Everything should be in line. So this point, although in one sense to say that God is the creator of everything, that's not the most important point, that he's playing in Vrindavan, with his friends, that's the actual point. What's the most important thing? What's in the news these days? Turmoil in Egypt, turmoil in Syria, turmoil everywhere, in everyone's life, in some places more manifest than others. There was turmoil right here in this village. How many years ago? Less than 20 years ago? Less than 20 years ago, it was hell just here in this village. Now it's all very peaceful. And again, any time the turmoil may come. So that's the news. The news is, but what's the real news? The real news is that Krishna is in the pasturing grounds, taking out his cows, time to come back, although in here it's not anywhere near sunset, but in India it should be sunset time around now. So Krishna should be returning home. All the residents of Vrindavan are looking out. The ones who couldn't go with him, they're looking to receive him, and the demigods are coming to pray to him. So that's the real news. That's the really important thing. What goes on in this world is of no ultimate importance. Just like people in Egypt, probably the vast majority of them are unaware that there was any turmoil in Croatia. Probably many of them never even heard of Croatia. In fact, until the turmoil came, most people in the world had never heard of Croatia. Definitely most people in America had never heard of Iraq until their president decided that they had to invade. Actually, it was the first war was with Kuwait and Iraq. So these things come and go. But Krishna is eternal. His pastimes are eternal. So the really important things to know about Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world, but because we are in this material world and we judge reality to be what's going on here, and we think it's very important. We experience it as being very important. We think that what's going on all around me is so important. So for us, our theism begins with understanding how God relates to this world. Why is this world here? What are we doing here? How do we get out of here? What is the real world beyond this world? This is how we begin our God consciousness. And actually in Bhagavad Gita, although Krishna begins by, of course, Bhagavad Gita is the essential introductory knowledge of the science of God. When we say introductory, that doesn't mean that it's just some children's game. But that knowledge is far more advanced than any knowledge taught in any university in the world. And even great spiritualists may not come to this point of even approaching the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. It may take them many, many lives to do so. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he starts off by speaking about the difference between the body and the soul. And when he introduces, gradually he introduces the subject of himself. Beyond who we are we the body, are we the soul? There's the much more important topic of him. He is the actual topic. Vaidesha sarvaraham eva vedyaha. In all the Vedas, Veda means knowledge. What is the subject of knowledge? What's the essence? Krishna. That's the answer to all questions. Just like when I ask for questions at the end of a class, often devotees start by saying Hare Krishna before they ask their question. And I tell them that's the answer. That's not the question. What's the question? And we find that it's very, very interesting section in the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, where the four Kumaras, who are great gyanis, and they're sitting and meditating, and you know, really top-of-the-line gyanis, and they were thinking about something and discussing among themselves, and they got all confused, and they went to Lord Brahma, and they asked him a question, and he got all confused also. I mean, we're talking about the biggest gyanis and rishis and the biggest spiritualists in the whole universe. So the question was that we find that the senses are intricately, intimately, and inseparably involved with the sense objects. The senses, there is the sense of sight. Well, there has to be something to see. There's the sense of hearing, there has to be a sound to hear. So liberation means to withdraw our consciousness from this world, but our consciousness is manifested in this world as the through the senses which interact with the sense objects, and they're so intricately interlinked that it seems it's impossible to delink them. So what's the answer to this? So the Kumaras, they didn't get the answer. They asked Lord Brahma, and he also thought, well, I never thought about that one either. He was also confused, and then they saw a swan in their presence, who happened to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hamsa Avatar, and said, what about me? I'm the actual subject of knowledge. What do you think about me? You focus your senses on me. Don't think that it's just everything that exists is just in this world. When you remember me, then everything becomes easy. So I'm just making it concise here. So for us, we're so much absorbed in this world. Our whole consciousness, we take this world to be real. So we have to hear messages from beyond this world. This world is not all in all. It is asat. It is temporary and therefore unreal. It has no real existence. Everything, in one sense, yes, but in another sense, no. Just like, I am the father of these children. Is it true? Yeah, it's true. Okay, it's true. But how true is it? My eldest child is 15 years old. It wasn't true 16 years ago. And then within 50, 60 years, I'll be dead. And then it won't be true again. So it's not eternally true. It's only temporarily true. In my millions and billions and zillions of lifetimes, it's just a flash, a blip. So is it true? Yeah, but is it true in the fullest sense? Is it an eternal fact? No. So, understanding reality is Krishna. We tend to take this world so seriously. What I'm doing here and now, it's so important. But it's of no real importance. It's of no more importance than experiences in a dream, which we wake up and it may be some lingering memory of what happened in the dream. And then we think, oh, that was a dream. And then we forget it and go on with our life. So just like that, just a flash, and then it's gone. And then we forget. What were we doing in our last life? We can have... a fly is biting. Is it real or not? Well, it seems real. It seems real. Now I can still feel the mild pain. Is it real? Yeah, but it's not that important. It's not really real in the fullest sense. So, many of these names in Vishnu Sahasranam, they bring us into the consciousness of Krishna in relationship with this world and help us to understand that this world is not all in all. His real role and our real relationship with him is nothing actually to do with this world. So all this has to be understood very carefully and correctly also. Understanding this, one can become totally detached from the world. Like Vamsidas Babaji, whose disappearance day is upcoming. But for most people, it's not possible or recommended to become detached in that way. Of course, we should become detached in the manner that he's detached, but because we cannot do so artificially, therefore we have to follow the rules given by the Supreme Lord by which we can come to that consciousness of understanding nothing in this world is real. Padma Patram Ivambhasa. Krishna gives the example in Bhagavad Gita that we can live in this world comparable to a drop of water on a lotus leaf. It's there. It's on the lotus leaf. It's not fallen into the water. But it will be there only temporary. It has no actual connection with it. The Srimad, I was saying in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna starts off by giving the knowledge of the difference between the temporary, the body, and the eternal, the soul. Then he gradually introduces knowledge of himself, but much of the knowledge of himself is in relation to this world. How we can begin to see him from our present perspective. So he says, for instance, Rasoham apsukantaya, I am the taste of water. Prabhashmi shashi surya yoho, I am the light of the sun and the moon. Shabda ke, I am the sound in ether. Paurushang nirshu, I am the ability in man. And in pranava sarva vedeshu, I am the omkar in the Vedas. Persons who live in Vedic culture, they may hear the om being pronounced quite often as people offer oblations into brahmanas. They offer oblations, especially brahmanas would offer oblations into the fire with the sound om, and in various ceremonies, or even for making or administering medicine, for instance, the sound om may be vibrated. So when you hear the sound Om, you should understand that is Krishna. And Krishna gives many examples of how we can begin to see him manifested in this world. But that is to help us to see beyond this world, to see his existence, which is ultimately beyond this world. He is within the world and beyond it also, immanent and transcendent. It means he's omnipresent within the world, but his existence is also transcendent to it. So that's Vishva Shrig, the creator of the universe, and Vishva Drik, the maintainer of the universe, he who holds it up. So that has been discussed in another name. Just one name that has just come, Dharani Dharana, the holder of the world, and there are other names which I can't remember just now, which means the maintainer of the universe. Regarding the universe and our relationship to it, how real that is, we find in the Bhagavatam and elsewhere the description of Markandeya Rishi, who was offered a benediction by Vishnu, and he chose an unusual benediction. We may ask to, usually devotees, they ask, please show me your transcendental form. There are many transcendental benedictions one may ask for. Please give me the association of your devotees. But Markandeya Rishi, he asked for the benediction of seeing Krishna's material energy. We see it all the time. But how to see it, how to see that energy in all her potency and manifestation. So, Krishna breathed in. And Markandeya Rishi got breathed in also. The whole universe got breathed in. And then Markandeya Rishi found himself floating on the waters of devastation during the time of devastation for as long a period as the whole universe exists, which is a very long period. Somewhere in one Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada said 311 trillion years and so many billions and so many millions and thousands. Actually, in Vedic mathematics, you can say it much more easily instead of saying trillion, million, this, that, because they have terms. They have terms for very large numbers, which surprised Westerners when they found out that they had terms which were regularly used for very large numbers. It goes higher than in the English terminology, I think. We have million, billion, trillion, quadrillion. Beyond that, I don't know. Is there any such term? Pentillion? I never heard that. And then after that, it's just 10 to the power of 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever. But in Vedic mathematics, they're much higher figures, which are required actually in Jyotish, which is usually nowadays understood to mean astrology, but that's astronomy. They're not separate studies. It's an Upaveda or a secondary Veda. So the Markandeya Rishi, he floated or was buffeted about in the waters of devastation for a long, long time, suffering situation. He asked to see Maya. It's don't ask for that benediction. How we cannot see Maya? That should be a good. But anyway, Markandeya Rishi is a great personality, and for our benefit, so that we can hear later he got this benediction of being buffeted in the water. You know what that means? Buffeted, it means thrown backwards and forwards. B-U-F-F-E-T. It's different to choose your own food if you're a Frenchman. Buffet. Spelled the same way. So it means being thrown backwards and forwards forcefully. Or being hit again and again. So he was thrown backwards and forwards, suffering in the waters of the devastation with no one else around, because everyone else is absorbed in the body of Vishnu in a dormant state. So this went on for a long, long, long time, when eventually he saw a little boy floating on a banyan leaf, sucking his toe. That little boy was Krishna. In the water of devastation, he sometimes lies on a banyan leaf as a baby and sucks his own toe. Babies, they have agile bodies. What's the word? Agile or flexible bodies. So sometimes they suck their toes, and baby Krishna does so also. Because he thinks that I have so many devotees and they're all very anxious for the nectar of my lotus feet. It must be pretty good. I think I'll taste it myself. So Krishna is sucking his own lotus feet, enjoying the nectar. Quite happy, floating on the water of devastation. And Markandeya is suffering there. So then he sees Krishna, he realizes Krishna, then he gets thrown out again. And Krishna said, "So, you saw Maya? Did you like it?" So, these names, in this particular verse of Vishnu Sahasranam, Baladev Vidyabhushan, who's the only Gaudiya Acharya who has commented on Vishnu Sahasranam, he says these names, they're all in connection with that baby Krishna floating on the waters of devastation, sucking his toe. So the creator of the universe, Krishna, is simply enjoying on the water of devastation. He's enjoying, everything he does is enjoyable. And then he creates the universe. He's a little baby. Little babies, they tend to urinate and defecate here and there. So Krishna's sweating. That means that turns into the water of the, in which all the universes appear. So yeah, so that's one name. Some discussion of it. Another meaning, because all these names can have many meanings. Those who are expert in Sanskrit can find many meanings for these names. So one commentator gives the idea that this name indicates that he has created this world with pragalbhya, which means with boldness, confidence, pride, bravery. So Krishna, he creates this world very confidently. It's not that he's just fiddling around in a laboratory and wondering what's going to happen. He knows everything's completely under his control. It's not just an experiment that went wrong. Experiment that went wrong and then the universe was created. Everything, Krishna knows what he's doing. Exactly what he's doing. Everything's under his control. The world might seem to be chaotic. From our perspective, it is chaotic. But mayadhyakshena prakriti, this whole material cosmos is under Krishna's control. So in our chaotic lives, we can just get in line with Krishna and we'll find that Even just like Krishna floating on the leaf in the midst of chaos, Krishna is completely calm, just enjoying himself, being happy. He's not disturbed. So in the same way, a self-realized person amid the chaos of this material world, he realizes it's just, anyway, this is normal. It's just normal that everything is chaotic from our perspective. But because he's linked with this Supreme, then he's just completely calm and undisturbed. So many terrible things may happen, but he realizes that anyway, this is the way the world is. That's the way it is. But our eternal relationship is with Krishna. What is that? Guru Naapaye Vichalyate. What is that? Dukkha. In the sixth chapter, Krishna speaks about the yogi who, even in the midst of tremendous difficulties... Guru Naapi Vichalyate. What comes before that? Tam Vidyat Dukkha Samyogam. Yatro Paramate Chittam. Nirudha Yoga Sevaya. Yatra Chaivatmanatmanam. Pashyanatman Tushya, because he sees always Krishna, he's always fully satisfied and he's fully blissful. And even if he's in a very difficult situation, he just remains completely satisfied. Easy to say. But we have to say it as Krishna says it. And then we can remember in the midst of our chaotic lives that after all, this is all temporary. Everything will go. All things must pass. Smiling? That's the name of an album by George Harrison. But actually it's words from the Bible. There is some wisdom in there amidst everything else. All things, everything in this world must pass. So, why take it so seriously? Our relationship is with Krishna. So, another name. The next name is given. It's one of those names that could be two names. Because in the Sanskrit, you can take some names as a joint name, or you can split them up according to rules of, what would that be? Rules, sandhi. I was trying to think of the English word, but I couldn't. Rules of sandhi. So Vishvabhuk or Vishvabhuk Vibhu. So we can either take Vishvabhuk as one name or Vishvabhug Vibhu. So Vishvabhug means the enjoyer of the universe. And Vibhu, that can be translated in various ways. So Vishvabhug means and again, the Vishvabhug can have various meanings. Vishva is taken as the universe. And bhuk means the enjoyer. So Krishna is the enjoyer. Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhukta cha prabhureva cha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Actually, Krishna doesn't enjoy this world in the same way that the jivas who are conditioned within it, try to enjoy it. The conception that I am the enjoyer of this world is the cause of the jivas being bound within it. Ishvaroham aham bhogi. To think that I am the master of this world and the enjoyer of it, the sense of being the enjoyer of it, the sense of that, of the jiva, is the very cause of his bondage within it. He thinks that I am the controller, but by thinking that he is the controller, he becomes completely controlled. And by understanding I am not the controller, then he becomes released from the laws of material nature. So Krishna is the enjoyer. That doesn't mean that Krishna is interested in this petty material enjoyment. But he enters within this world and enjoys his pastimes within it. And he gives the process of yajna especially, which is meant for offering to him. He is also yajna bhuk. He's the enjoyer of sacrifice. So within the Vedic process, all the activities of human beings culminate in sacrifice, yajna. And that is supposed to be offered to Vishnu as the enjoyer of the sacrifice. So Krishna is the enjoyer of everything. Everything is to be offered to him. This is the point. Not that he has anything intrinsically to enjoy in this world. He's got a much better world, the spiritual world. But still, just like if we take that example of the prison house, this mature world is like a prison house. So if some prisoners, with their limited resources that they have within the prison, they make some presentation. Maybe they make some decorated basket or some pennant which says, God save the king, or something like this, has embroidered on it, which they send to the king. So in this way they communicate to him that actually we can't really offer much to you, but we are acknowledging that you are great and we're doing something good. That's what good citizens do. They sing, at least in England, when there's not a queen, they sing God Save the King. And for the last 60 years, they've been singing, God Save the Queen. So a good citizen sings, God Save the Queen, or God Save the King. So in the same way, the prisoners in the prison house, they don't have much facility to serve him, but the offering of yajna is the method by which they can begin to recognize that we are not meant to be enjoyers of this world. We are meant to serve Vishnu. And with whatever we have, which is given by him, we can start to serve him. And that will be recognized by Vishnu. So really there's nothing within this world enjoyable. It is meant as a place of suffering. But if the inhabitants of this universe, they come to the purified state of understanding, then they can understand that whatever we have within this world that we think is meant for our enjoyment, we shall offer to him. And this is the essence of sacrifice. The essence of sacrifice is not building a huge fire and offering all kinds of things in it, into it with mantras. The essence, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has encapsulated, is manasa deho geho jo kichu mor apilun tua pade nandakisha. That whatever I think is mine, whatever I have the sense of as being mine, my mind, my body, my house, we offer everything to Krishna. So in this way, we understand that Krishna, he is the enjoyer of this universe, not that he attempts to or has any attraction, to the petty things of this world, but the understanding of him as the enjoyer of this world, that is more necessary for us to understand his position as the enjoyer of this world. We are not the enjoyer. So that name and that understanding is more for the conditioned souls to develop a sense of, rather than that his Krishna's constitutional position is not the as the enjoyer of this world. He is the enjoyer of his own world. He's the enjoyer of everything, but not specifically of this world. Or we can say Vishvabhuk, that he has his own universe, which he is enjoying. The fact that he is the enjoyer, that is the important point. So, Vishva means that which is all-pervading. So, in any enjoyment, the principle, if there is any pleasure, the principle of enjoyment, that comes from Krishna. He is the enjoyer. If we feel any pleasure in anything, if any jiva feels any pleasure in anything, the bird is catching the insect to eat and feels some pleasure in doing so. So whatever pleasure there is, that derives from Krishna. But the pleasure that Krishna experiences is of a wholly different quality and quantity to any pleasure that we enjoy in our, or the bird catching the insect enjoys in the very constricted sense of enjoying the senses in contact with the sense objects. So what is the nature of Krishna's enjoyment? This we can try to understand means it's beyond our power to understand, but at least we can understand that enjoyment of Krishna is unlimited and completely pure and completely beneficial to anyone, to everyone. The attempt for us to attempt to enjoy anything in this world means as soon as we think like that, and everyone in this world is thinking like that all the time, as soon as we think to enjoy, immediately all the problems begin. All problems come from thinking, I will enjoy. Directly and indirectly. Directly means enjoyment in this world means exploitation of everyone and everything else. Enjoying. So that causes problems for everyone and for ourselves also. But Krishna's enjoyment, that is completely beneficial to all others. So Krishna's enjoyment, that is all good. We should not be envious of Krishna, thinking that I am the enjoyer. We understand that Krishna is the enjoyer of this world and of everything. Then we can become free of the envious mentality that I should enjoy. We give up that mentality of making myself in. My position is to assist Krishna in his enjoyment, though he doesn't need my assistance. But my position is to serve Krishna and to serve more experienced servants of Krishna in his enjoyment. When we understand he is the center, everything is meant for him. Everything is spinning. That is one name of his just came up. Avartino. He who makes Avartina, he who makes everything spin. But everything is spinning around him. He is the center. In anything that spins, like a whirlpool or a top. You know this top, spinning top? Spins around. So the center point is still. So the center point is Krishna. If we agree to rotate around Krishna, all looking toward him, all, then we become in harmony, just like the planets they rotate around the sun. Is that right? No, around the pole star. So that remains still. And they're all harmoniously rotating around him. So if we agree that anyway everything's spinning, in this world everything is spinning out of control. Actually, it's under Krishna's control, but we are thinking we are in control. So from our perspective, it's out of control. And actually, we are out of control. We do not control. But when we see that the center is Krishna, he makes everything spin. He is the one that's making it go round and round, not us. And we recognize that, then we get in harmony with Krishna. We do so by following the rules that he has given in Shastra. So, he is the enjoyer. We are not the enjoyer. This point we should understand. It's so difficult for us to understand. He is the... intellectually shouldn't be very difficult, but because we are trying to enjoy our senses, we find it very difficult to understand. So we have to hear again and again. He is the enjoyer. And he is the protector. So these two functions, in material consciousness, the function of the enjoyer and the function of the protector, they don't seem to go together. Just like there's this idea that man, God gave man dominion over the earth. That means he can just destroy everything and kill the animals. But no, enjoyment doesn't mean destruction. This is, in materialistic consciousness, enjoyment means, yeah, to devour. We also have this word, Vishvabhuk. So from that idea of just, I was quoting that before, bhunkte, to eat. So the idea means to devour. But Krishna, he enjoys, but he does not destroy. The idea that we enjoy others by dominating them, by smashing them, or by consuming. This is the materialistic understanding of enjoyment. But the spiritual understanding of enjoyment is that you... enjoyment doesn't mean to exploit, but to help others also to develop. That is the enjoyment of a pious person. We have the verses there in Bhagavatam: Guru na sasyat, swajano na sasyat, janani na pitana sasyat, janani na sasyat, daivang na tatsyan na patischa sasyan. One should not become a guru, a relative, a father, a mother, a worshipable person, a husband, unless one can deliver one's dependence from death. So, in materialistic demoniac consciousness, one takes a superior position to others to exploit them. But in divine consciousness, one takes a superior position to others to help others to develop, to come up. The parents, they desire the development, and ultimately the development is how to get free from death. That's the ultimate development. So the parents, they should like to see their children develop and become flourishing. Of course, in material life, they have a wrong idea of what it means to develop and to flourish. But the parents naturally should like to see their children do well in life. So the guru, they should like to see their disciples develop. The materialistic so-called guru accepts disciples just to accept praise from them, to accept facilities from them, to accept donations from them. But a guru should accept disciples, yes, takes a superior position, instructs them, do this, don't do that. And the disciple follows because he has the faith that the guru is instructing me so that I can develop for my own good. So the guru is not an enjoyer of the disciples. The parent is not an enjoyer of the children. In the modern age, there's this idea, the idea of personal enjoyment without responsibility is prominent. So people have children, they think, yeah, it'd be nice to have a kid. That would be nice. I'd like to have a child. I like. But the responsibility to try... we don't tell the children anything because they just have to choose whatever they like. So at the age of 5, they have full access to the internet with all the pornography and violence because, you know, they let them enjoy also. No responsibility. So, one takes, in Vedic culture, one takes a position of what might, of superiority only to develop others. So, it's not for enjoyment. Krishna's enjoyment, we can't really understand that in. If we try to understand it in terms of what we think is enjoyment, then we'll misunderstand, because Krishna is Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. He's the best well-wisher of everyone. So his enjoyment is not like the enjoyment of a mindless, wanton sense enjoyer who enjoy into hell with everyone else. Let me just enjoy myself. But Krishna is not such an irresponsible person. From the demoniac platform, we cannot begin to understand Krishna. So in the Vedic process, first we should follow dharma. We should understand what is our responsibility. Then, after many lifetimes of following dharma, then we might become eligible to understand knowledge of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given it very easily to everyone, but is often misunderstood and misinterpreted because we don't have the background of understanding what it means to be even a human being in the real sense of the term, what to speak of being a transcendentalist. So hearing and chanting must go on side by side. We're being given the highest knowledge, but we're still in the consciousness of enjoying this world in the grossest possible way. We have to come out of this. Then we can begin to understand who is Krishna. What is his enjoyment? It is not the irresponsible life of a hippie. Krishna has long hair, but he's not a hippie. He plays a flute, but he's not a hippie. Krishna is most responsible. So, Krishna is the protector of this world. We also cannot protect. That is another illusion. That we can, of course, within the role that we are given, the parents have to protect the children, the guru has to protect the disciples, within the role that they're given. But ultimately, anyone in this world is helpless. We can only help as much as we're given the ability to do so by Krishna. Therefore, this Prahlad Maharaj made this prayer. What is that now? I'm just thinking. Pita. What is it? What's the first word? Paulasya. Balasya neha sharanang pitaro nrsingha. The parents, they cannot protect a child. Nartasya chagata mudanvati majjato. No. A distressed person, they cannot be benefited. Just like someone who's drowning. If they're destined to drown, they have to drown. The boat can't help them. Medicine, you bring them medicine, they'll still die. unless they are protected by Krishna. Krishna is the ultimate protector. Nartasya chagana vadamadima taptasya tatrividhir ya ihanja seshtas. Then what's the next line, Maharaj? Tadvido tanabritang ya tvadupekshitanam. Yeah, those who neglect you or are neglected by you, unless Krishna is involved, no one can be protected. In this world, those who have material body. Krishna is the protective principle. So Krishna protects. He is the protector. We are not the protector. Yeah, so the term can also mean one who absorbs everything in himself at the time of devastation. Krishna breathes in, everything goes in. Just by breathing, everything goes within him. So Vibhu, the Srila Prabhupada always translates that as powerful. Although that meaning, at least according to Monier Williams, Monier Williams is one person, he compiled the Sanskrit to English dictionary, that's an implied meaning. Vibhu, who has Vaibhava, one name of Vishnu in Vishnu Sahasrara, Vaibhava. So who has all opulence, his glory, who's all powerful. So that is, we could say, an axiomatic name of God. If he's not all powerful, then what is he? So all powerful, all power, all glory, that is within him. And practically we can say all the names of Vishnu Sahasranam, they attest to his glory. And then when one major aspect of the sweetness of Krishna is understanding everything about his glory and not being particularly attracted to it, because one is so much attracted to his sweetness. So that is the love of Krishna, that the platform of love of Krishna that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu particularly wanted to impart to others. Vibhu, vividham bhavati yati vibhu, who has many forms, many manifestations. Everything is a manifestation of Krishna. This Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita that everything is a manifestation of Krishna. To see Krishna everywhere, that is Krishna consciousness. To see Krishna everywhere and everything is in Krishna. Nothing is separate from Krishna. So that is another understanding. He fills up everything. Krishna is everywhere. You can't get away from Krishna. Even the atheists, they want to run away. They can't run away from Krishna. You can't get away from Krishna. As much as we try to, we cannot be away from Krishna. So, yeah, that 10th chapter of Gita, Krishna describes some of his vibhutis. That's another name of Krishna and Vishnu Sahasrara. Vibhuti. Manifestations of his opulence. Hare Krishna. So I'm not going to start on another name because I don't have enough time. So I'll finish the lecture here and you can all go and do whatever you like because this class is finished. But whatever we should do in remembrance of Krishna, as he likes. Yeah, so this lecture is over. Unless there are any questions on it. Okay, the hand went up. What is the question, please?
Ajapisana avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropisa prakritim svamadishtaya sambhavam yatma maya. How I understood, he appears.
That comes later in the Gita. Anyway, it's also there in the Gita.
But how he appear, like always like prakriti, like living
speak into
force.
The mic.
Like a prakriti, like living force of the material world. And I didn't understand how he can appear like prakriti. Prakritim svamadishtaya sambhavam yatma maya. Can you a little bit?
How Krishna appears as prakriti? Yeah. Well, that's his bheda-bhed. Everything is him. Still everything is different from him. Prakritim svamadhishtaya sambhavami amam. Oh, yeah, ajopi sanavya. Yeah, that comes just before that, yeah. Ajopi sanavya amabhutanam ishvaropi. Well, he explains the paradox. This verse is paradoxical. Ajopi sanavyayatma. I'm unborn, my form is never expended, never destroyed. Ajopi sanavyayatma. Bhutanam ishvaro. Even though I am the controller of all living beings, but still I appear within this world, prakritim svamadhishtaya sambhavami, by my own mercy or my own energy. That is explained in the Bhagavatam. There's one verse, very important verse. Etad ishanam ishasya prakritisto, which means prakritim svamadhishtaya, means the same. I'm situated within prakriti. Prakritisto pitadgunai na yujyate sadatmasthaya. Yata, what is it? Yata bhaktis tata. No, the last line. Yata bhutis tadashraya. Yeah. So this is, just before that, there's this description of how Krishna, with his queens in Dwaraka, and they're trying to seduce him, and all this kind of thing. So then it comes that this is the godness of God. Etad ishanam ishasya. That even though he's situated within this material world, he does not partake of its qualities. The three modes of material nature. Prakriti sto, api tadgunai, the qualities of this material world, na yujyate, he doesn't become joined up with that. But sadatmasthaya, he's always fixed in his own quality, in his own atma, in his own ishatva, his quality of being the supreme controller. And yatha buddhis tadashra, that applies to his devotees also. So he remains as he is, even though he appears within this world. Same example given of the governor of the prison, may visit the prison, but he doesn't become a prisoner. He doesn't come under the laws of the prison.
I'm just confused about prakritim. Appearing like prakritim svamadhishtaya, regularly.
Prakritim svamadhishtaya, he appears within this prakriti, but he doesn't become part of it. This is Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. It's a whole science of knowledge of God. We should try to understand this and to. We have such knowledge by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. We should try to communicate this to others. Apart from distributing books and holding festivals so that people think Krishna consciousness is nice and hearing the holy name, we have a great teaching, which is, it really, it's far, far above anything that all the universities in the world and all the seminaries have. They don't have a clue. We have a great philosophy. We should try to communicate that to others. It's an important task of our movement, which I believe is neglected to a large extent, that we have to communicate this to the world. Of course, the science of God is a very high topic. We can begin at the beginning. Just in the last week in Paris, I had a two-day public seminar, I guess you could call it, on the mechanism of reincarnation. How does it work? And there are people who have never heard of our movement. In fact, one man, he thought, as many people do, we're in the second day, and he said, in Buddhism. I said, it's not Buddhism. He thought I was a Buddhist. So, they have no idea about all these things, but we do. We should communicate this to others, this knowledge. Hare Krishna.